Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Exists a dark side. Most people rise above it, but some are consumed by it.
Michael?
Until there is nothing left but pure evil.
Behind these eyes, one finds only darkness. These are the eyes of a psychopath.
Rob Zombie unleashes an extreme vision of terror and reinvents a legend. Halloween.
Well, this is the Savage Nation. Now, that was a trailer from the movie Halloween done in 2007. Let me explain why I played it. First of all, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, etc. and so on. There will be politics, I guarantee you. Maybe a recipe or two, whatever. But I don't watch horror movies. I hate them. I avoid them. If anyone's watching them in the house, I walk out of the room. I won't watch science fiction because the world is crazy enough as it is. I need stability. So therefore, I don't watch science fiction or horror. All I got to do is watch Obama give another speech about socialized medicine or a cap and trade bill, which is a scam of scams, the greatest American scam in history. I don't need a horror show. But anyway, last night, I drank too much coffee before the show and I couldn't sleep. So I watched a lot of movies. One of them was a movie done in 2000 about in Thailand about a deaf mute who's an assassin. It was actually so well done, I watched the whole movie. It was too long, but it was great. Very compelling acting by two Hong Kong brothers. Watched that. Went right into Halloween 2007. At that point, I was so whacked out on my, you know, like a kid in the movie theater. So that was at midnight. I turned on Halloween, and I couldn't stop watching it. It was so horrible. A 10-year-old boy who kills his stepfather, his sister, the sister's boyfriend. They lock him up. 20 years later, he escapes from the madhouse. I turned it off at that point. And I couldn't sleep. I was so agitated from the horror movie, it was 2 in the morning, that I decided to read the biggest horror story I have yet to read this year. And it's about Goldman Sachs that was just published in Rolling Stone magazine. I had received it yesterday from a personal friend of mine, Craig Smith of, he advertises on the show Swiss American. He said, Michael, you have been trying to warn your listeners about Goldman Sachs running America, how they've owned the presidency for three different terms now, and no one believed you. And he said, now it's come out in Rolling Stone that everything that you've said is true. Now, I want to remind you that I was talking about Goldman Sachs 1 year before others in the media even heard of them. And the reason I was is because I knew that our past Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, Goldman Sachs. I knew that the previous architect of the screwing of the American people was Robert Rubin, Bill Clinton's former Treasury Secretary. He spent 26 years at Goldman Sachs before becoming chairman of Citigroup, which just got a $300 billion taxpayer bailout from Paulson. Do you understand how this works? Then there was John Thain, the chief of Merrill Lynch, who bought an $87,000 area rug for his office. While the company was going down the tubes, he was a former banker for Goldman Sachs. You want me to go on? Robert Steele, the former Goldman head of Wachovia, received $225 million in golden parachute payments just as his bank was imploding. Then Josh Bolton, Bush's chief of staff during the bailout. Mark Patterson, the current Treasury chief of staff, who was a Goldman lobbyist just a year ago. And Ed Liddy, the former Goldman director, who Paulson put in charge of bailed out insurance giant AIG. It goes on and on. What I'm trying to tell you is that Goldman Sachs, according to this article, has engineered every major market manipulation since the Great Depression, and they're about to do it again. What's intriguing about the article is that this was written by a far-left writer who understands that cap-and-trade, which was just passed in the House, is perhaps the greatest scam in the history of the world. The carbon credit scam being promoted by the Democrat Party has nothing to do with stopping global warming. It is a carbon market worth $1 trillion a year, and the company that is going to handle it all, Goldman Sachs, deeply enmeshed in it, is the head of the crime syndicate, the Gorleone crime syndicate, in my opinion, which is Al Gorleone. And this goes to the point that I'm trying to make. The fact of the matter is global warming is the greatest scam of all the scams put together. And Barack Obama was picked by Goldman Sachs and the bankers to push forward the carbon credit cap and trade scam, according to this article. Now, you may not know this, but this global warming scam being pushed forward was pushed because lobbyists spent $3.5 million. That is, Goldman Sachs alone spent $3.5 million to lobby climate issues. I don't think you understand this. This is not about do-gooders. This is not about the environment. This is not about saving the planet Earth. This is not the polar bears. This is about making some of the most evil men on Earth, who are some of the richest men on Earth, richer yet. The article concludes by saying it's a gangster state running on gangster economics, and even prices can't be trusted anymore. There are hidden taxes in every dollar you pay, and the fact is, you're going to pay it anyway. Now, I just heard that Barack Obama is going to go on vacation shortly to Martha's Vineyard. Now, you say, well, there's nothing wrong with that. No, but it ties right into the horror story I just told you about. I don't think you know it, but most of the major American bankers from Goldman Sachs and other firms all have houses on Martha's Vineyard. Every last one of them goes to Martha's Vineyard in the summer, and that's where their president, that's where their planted front man, Barack Obama, is going to learn from his handlers what he must do next to make certain that America continues to be fleeced like the sheep we are. And I want to talk about this if you do. If not, we'll go on to something else. I believe that Goldman Sachs, if there was an honest government, if there was a single honest official at the highest level, there would be a thorough and complete investigation of Goldman Sachs. Unfortunately, they have spent so much money buying politicians on both sides of the aisle that it's almost impossible to conceive that they will ever be investigated. You say, well, what do you have against bankers and banks? I have nothing against them. I myself have nothing against wealth if it's honestly earned. But if wealth is earned through fraud, if wealth is earned by manipulating markets, if wealth is earned by planting treasury secretaries who steal it from the taxpayers to give it to their friends, then there is something very wrong with it. Let's look at Bill Clinton's Treasury Secretary, Robert Rubin. He was on the cover of Time magazine in 19. I remember seeing Robert Rubin, and I thought there was something wrong with the pictures I was seeing about Robert Rubin at the time, when there was one story after another about Robert Rubin fly fisherman, Robert Rubin nice man, Robert Rubin Fleetwood Mac lover, Robert Rubin the greatest person in the history of finance. But the fact of the matter is, he had a Treasury deputy at that time whose name was Larry Summers, and he picked a federal chief called Alan Greenspan. Do you know who Alan Greenspan is? Do you see how it's all intimately connected? Who was Alan Greenspan married to? None other than the most the woman who most approximates the movie Halloween in television is his wife, Andrea Mitchell. She puts shudders through my spine. Andrea Mitchell, when she talks in that pseudo-sophisticated Upper East Side hag voice, makes me think of a slasher movie like Halloween. She makes me think of Ruth Madoff as a Girl Scout compared to Andrea Mitchell and Alan Greenspan. They're all one family. Don't you understand that? Now, how did this all happen? Wall Street was not always like this, by the way. Wall Street had been regulated ever since the Great Depression for over 60 years. There were protections built in to prevent another blowout. What happened is that these devious gonoffs rewrote the laws to permit themselves to produce fiduciary instruments that permitted them to trade absolute garbage for money upon which they made billions of dollars, took the money out and left you holding the bag, and they robbed old people, they robbed children, they robbed charities, and they were left with the charities, the old people and children were left with nothing, while these filthy, dirty pigs took billions of dollars out of their pockets. And don't think I'm making this up. You've got to read this article. I knew there was something wrong with the picture when I saw one Goldman Sachs CEO after another as Treasury Secretary. I knew something was wrong with the picture. But this article actually elucidates the people, what they did, what laws they rewrote, and how they did it. I want to read you one paragraph from the article. Since the Depression, there were strict underwriting guidelines that Wall Street adhered to when taking a company public, says one prominent hedge fund manager. The company had to be in business for a minimum of 5 years, and it had to show profitability for 3 consecutive years. But Wall Street took these guidelines and threw them in the trash. Goldman Sachs completed the snow job by pumping up the sham stocks. Did you hear this? So they remember during the dot-com burst? They created it, according to this article. The dot-com stock, the tech stock bubble, they made billions of dollars, they changed the laws, and they took obscene profits, and they left you holding the bag. The next thing that they did was take their money, and they did the next bubble, the housing trick. It was all a bubble. And what they did was they turned houses into IPOs, in essence. You may not know this, but when I was young and I wanted my first mortgage, I had to produce the following. I had to show I had 20% down. I had to show I had a steady income and a good job. I had to show I had a good credit rating. And I also had to show a real first and last name. All of this went out the window with the crooks in the U.S. government. Goldman Sachs created vehicles to package these garbage mortgages that were given to anybody who wanted them. Barney Frank, of course, enabled this by forcing banks that didn't want to go along with it to lend money to unqualified people, largely illegal aliens who had fake names. And so this created a monster of toxic debt because everybody knew that these mortgages would eventually not be paid. And once they collapsed, the housing market would collapse with it. And who made the money before the housing market collapsed? Who took the money out? Who took out the billions and billions of dollars? Have you ever heard of an instrument called credit default swaps? Do you know what collateralized debt obligations are? They're complicated, aren't they? They're pure, unadulterated garbage. They're criminal enterprises. Goldman Sachs created them, and they stole the money and left you with a housing collapse. I'll be right back. Savage. Halloween, and I couldn't sleep last night after seeing the slasher movie, and I read the article in Rolling Stone called The Great American Bubble Machine. From tech stocks to high gas prices, Goldman Sachs has engineered every major market manipulation since the Great Depression, and they're about to do it again. And he's talking about the so-called global warming bill that just passed and the cap and trade scam. And he goes back to the beginning, and he says most of us know the major players by now. As George Bush's last Treasury Secretary, former Goldman CEO Henry Paulson was the architect of the bailout, a suspiciously self-serving plan to funnel trillions of your dollars to a handful of his old friends on Wall Street. I told you that when it happened. Robert Rubin, Bill Clinton's former Treasury Secretary, spent 26 years at Goldman before becoming chairman of Citigroup, which in turn got a $300 billion taxpayer bailout from Paulson. John Thane, I mean, there's a whole bunch of names. We don't have to go through every one of them. You should just know that these people have been ruining America, not running America, ruining America for decades right now. And it was all well and good while the bubbles were floating in the air, wasn't it? Society was feeling like it was wealthy, but it was all fake wealth. It was totally fake wealth. And the suckers who got in at the end are the people who got screwed. The fact is, these pyramid schemes... are no different than those created by Bernie Madoff. The only difference is Bernie Madoff was not politically connected. Yes, he bought off Chuck Schumer, Chris Dodd, and some other low-life Democrats long enough to keep the SEC off his back. But Bernie Madoff was not Treasury Secretary. Paulson was in the last administration. And, of course, Paulson was a far more clever Ponzi schemer than Madoff, in my opinion. But where is Paulson today? Why have you not heard from this man? Where is he? Why is there no discussion of him when he's the man who engineered the so-called bailout that has not helped the economy? It's just bailed out his friends on Wall Street. He says, if America is now circling the drain, Goldman Sachs has found a way to be that drain. I'm reading from the article. I can't quote the whole article, but you have to see how these bankers modified laws that were put in place by more honorable men to protect America and America's economy, and how these evildoers rewrote the laws to permit themselves to create fiduciary instruments that were nothing more than sewage, and then sell this sewage to other people who then bought and sold the sewage and made commissions on the sewage. And at the end, you were left holding the bag. The old people, in other words, the children, the pensioners, were wound up with nothing. Alan Greenspan, Larry Summers, Robert Rubin, and SE Chief Arthur Levitt are mentioned in the article. You see, there was a time not long ago that people were screaming for more regulation of the gangsters and gangsterism. But he says that more regulation wasn't exactly what Goldman had in mind. He said the banks want it stopped, said Michael Greenberger, who worked for, now law professor at the University of Maryland. He said, quote, and I'm quoting now, Alan Greenspan, Lawrence Summers, Robert Rubin, and SE Chief Arthur Levitt want the regulation stopped. Did you hear this? And so they stopped it. The minute they stopped it, the Commodity Futures Modernization Act was inserted into an 11,000-page spending bill, and that permitted commodities to be turned into the equivalent of sewage pumped into a bubble. In other words, the commodities markets were controlled to protect the farmer originally. But these gangsters rewrote the laws, according to this article, to screw the world, not just the farmers, in order to suck more money out of the economy, according to this article.
Savage.
We are talking about a new expose that has been written in Rolling Stone about Goldman Sachs. It's very important for a number of reasons. One, because it appears to be 100% true. Two, because it's long overdue. And three, I tried to tell you about the danger of having an investment bank running America. Because by nature, a private business that's running a government is going to use the government's, the power of the government, to profit for themselves, you see. And I said, the article's extremely long. I read it at 3 o'clock in the morning last night, and it was the worst horror show I've ever seen because it's everything I feared but more. I have nothing against wealth. I admire wealthy people who made their money by creating a service or a product that was useful and built upon their guts, their brain, and their audacity. I admire it very much. I detest thieves of this type. I have more respect for organized criminals than I do for these people for one reason. The organized criminal is a crook, and he is a crook. The drug dealer is a drug dealer. They're evil people. But they don't disguise themselves usually in the streets as something other than drug dealers. These guys pretend that they're cleaner than the driven snow. These are the men who get up and hire PR agencies to show them as fly fishermen, family men, etc. But they're villains. There was an age of the robber baron, if you read about it, at the turn of the century. It was so evil during the period of the robber baron that a populist president appeared named Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt ran as a populist. And you know what Teddy Roosevelt's principal campaign slogan was? Bust the trusts. Now, the trusts today would be called corporations. And, of course, you don't want to destroy corporations for the sake of destroying corporations, but what you want to do is get behind the veil of legitimacy that is created by many corporations behind which is nothing but a scam operation. And that's what this is we're talking about here. We have gangsters who have somehow bought off the politicians. They have destroyed Western democracy. They have sold us out to China and Saudi Arabia and God knows who else. They have created loopholes in the system that have not only robbed the economy of every dollar that they could get their greedy hands on, but they have destroyed the currency itself to the point where China's currency is now being considered as a world currency to replace the U.S. dollar. Who did it? The people at Martha's Vineyard. The people in the fat houses on Martha's Vineyard did it. The fact of the matter is there are names to these people. The fact is that these robber barons are very much alive and well. The fact of the matter is that the destroyed pension funds, the massive layoffs, the monster taxation that is going to be imposed upon we the people to pay for these scum vermin is going into their pockets. And that's what this article is about. These people are running and ruining the economy. But it's only just begun. It wasn't enough that they created and destroyed the tech stock bubble. They let you in at the last end, and then you got out with nothing. They got out with billions. They also scammed investors in housing through faulty and fake mortgage fiduciary instruments that had never been heard of before. They then manipulated the commodities market by inserting a clause in an 11,000-page bill to make certain that they could then go and screw the American farmer, not only out of his corn, but out of his silo and his tractor. Did you know, according to this article, I learned something I couldn't believe? He said that the average mortgage that they were selling to the second mortgage borrowers with some kind of instrument that I never heard of that they created, these genius thieves, the average equity that the people had in their homes was 0.71%. Can I repeat that again? There was a $494 million issue in that particular year of 2006. And many of the mortgages belonged to second mortgage borrowers who had an average equity in their homes of 0.71%. Moreover, 58% of the borrowers of these loans had no addresses of the homes, just zip codes. Yet, the major ratings agencies, Moody's and Standard & Poor's, rated 93% of this issue as investment-grade paper. How did that happen? How could it be that ratings agencies were also bought out by Goldman Sachs, according to this article? He said, not that Goldman was personally at any risk. The bank might be taking all these hideous, completely irresponsible mortgages from beneath gangster status firms like Countrywide and selling them off to municipalities and pensioners, old people, pretending the whole time that it wasn't grade D horse manure. But even as it was doing so, it was taking short positions in the same market, in essence, betting against the same garbage it was selling. So Goldman Sachs was selling garbage mortgages, second mortgages, and then taking short positions against these mortgages, betting that the mortgages would collapse. And they won on the short positions and left America with nothing. According to one manager in this article, it's exactly securities fraud. It's the heart of securities fraud. And he said, once again, Goldman got off virtually scot-free, staving off prosecution by agreeing to pay a penalty of $60 million, about what the bank's CDO division made in a day and a half during the real estate boom. You have to read how $4 a gallon gas was created by these people. When the actual supply was up, the demand was down. He says these gangster robber barons took oil and drove it to the $4 a gallon price in order to suck money out of mama and papa. I want to go on, but I can't. It's a very complicated, long article. You should read it. Strangely enough, it is in Rolling Stone. He said in Bubble 5, rigging the bailout. He said it began in September of last year when then-Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson made a momentous series of decisions. Although he had already engineered a rescue of Bear Stearns a few months before and helped bail out quasi-private lenders Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Paulson elected to let Lehman Brothers, one of Goldman's last real competitors, collapse without intervention. I did a whole show on Lehman Brothers. I was the one who told you that Lehman Brothers was forced to collapse by a competitor who was now running the Treasury Department. The very next day, Paulson greenlighted a massive $85 billion. Well, I could go on and on, but it's too much information for you. I know that. It's near July 4th. My teapot is brewing, and I can only do so much. He said, as envisioned, the next scam is global warming. As envisioned by Goldman, the fight to stop global warming will become a carbon market worth $1 trillion a year. So it's all a scam, as I've told you for years. He said it's a gangster state running on gangster economics. That's where we are today. The Great American Bubble Machine appearing in the July 9th through 23rd edition of Rolling Stone, and normally a publication I never read because it's nothing but drugs, sex, rock and roll, which I really, you know, could do without. I'm a little past the age of 15. Michigan, Brian, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just find it amazing that this article is in Rolling Stone. Do you think there's some kind of hope yet for journalism that we can publish?
Well,
that?
I think it's interesting that Rolling Stone would be the only magazine to investigate Goldman Sachs, don't you?
Yes.
What does that tell you? What does that tell you about interlocking corporate directorships, which I've been warning you about for 3 years? When you have a man who owns every major media outlet in the world, cable channel, regular channel, movie company, a book publishing division, magazines, why would he publish anything in any of his publications that might come back upon the bankers who lend him the money to expand his empire?
You know, I think they're just hiding in there because the basic demographic of Rolling Stone, you know, they don't look past the cover that, you know, Barack is the new Messiah. And
well, I know they're not too harsh on Barack, but if you read this article, you see Barack is just in essence, a front man for Goldman Sachs, like all the rest of them.
That's right.
Right. He's just he's a figurehead for the devious men at these investment banks. That's what this article is saying. You agree with that assessment?
Yes, sir. I certainly do.
Okay, so what can the people do about it? What can you do about it when you wake up and realize you're living in Paraguay and the country's been taken over by ex-Nazi guards who fled from Germany, in essence? You know, I'm making a gross analogy here. What are you going to do when you find out that people who were ex-stormtroopers are now running your government? How do you handle that?
There's nothing to handle.
There's a lot to handle. There's a lot to handle. The people are going to have to get so fed up that there is a massive populist uprising, and these people are tried, indicted, and arrested, and the country is taken back by honest men and women. It can happen. It's happened before. This is not the first time in American history that so few people controlled so much. The only difference is that we never had so many foreigners involved in controlling our currency. That's what worries me. I have a terrible fear we're going to wake up to a collapse of the American dollar as engineered by the money traders within Goldman Sachs. I can guarantee you, as I'm speaking to you today, they have a currency trading division that is going to profit when the dollar is collapsed and a new currency is created for the world markets. I can guarantee you that's going to happen. And guess what? The president will still go to Martha's Vineyard for croquette. Believe me, he is going there this summer. It's interesting to me that when George Bush went on vacation, the lightweights in the media criticized every vacation he took, but not when Barack Obama goes and parties with the very people who busted America out like a sporting goods store. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to New York City. George, on WOR, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Take the Rolling Stones article two steps further. Who did they sell it to? They sold it to the international mobs.
Wait, slow down. Wait, who did they sell what? Who was they and what did they sell what to?
Who did the people in power, United States, sell the worthless paper to?
In other words, which companies bought the worthless repackaged fiduciary instruments in mortgages, for example?
And the mobs, the international mobs, Russians, Indian, Asian, they want their money back. And they, you know how mobs are. They simply said, hey, you either give us the money or we're going to take it out on you personally. And that's why the disappearing money, you take a look at the Russian billionaire who's got that destroyer for a pleasure boat that he's on. He's, what, it was $300 million on this thing. He's got anti-missile.
Let's slow down. This article is about American gangsters on Wall Street posing as honest businessmen. This is about people who screwed the American people by rewriting the laws and deregulating Wall Street so they could sack the Treasury, in essence. And then they had so much money they could buy presidents. What does it have to do with foreigners?
Because they bought the worthless paper. It's worthless. And if you buy something...
The worthless paper that they created was being sold off to companies such as Countrywide. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
But you say yes with a kind of sad reluctance. What do you mean by that sad yes?
Somebody actually has to hold it. Where, for instance, if you are a big gangster, I mean big, billionaire.
Let's talk about the instruments they created. They created something called collateralized debt obligations. They bundled hundreds of different garbage mortgages, which were toxic debt, into something pretty called collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. Then they sold investors on the idea of CDOs that these mortgages would turn out to be good and you shouldn't worry about it, right? So they were junk mortgages that were made over into looking like AAA-rated investments, right? And then to hedge their own bets, Goldman got companies like AIG to provide insurance known as credit default swap CDOs to back them up. And what it was is it was Goldman behind both of them.
Ultimately, somebody, if you're international, where are you going
to... Do you know that Orange County, California was forced to default in 1994 because they bought these CDOs and credit default swaps?
Suppose internationally you also bought them. What are you going to do about it? If you're big
enough... you're giving a suppose... Look, what you're suggesting may or may not be true, but what you need to do is write an article which proves it. I think by the time you're halfway through it, you will be swimming with the fishes.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. I want to now pull back from this expose about Goldman Sachs, the robber barons of our time, according to this article in Rolling Stone. That claims that Goldman Sachs has engineered every major market manipulation since the Great Depression, and they're about to do it again, they say, with the so-called global warming bill or cap and trade, which is one of the greatest scams in history. Al Gore is right in the center of that. You have to read the article in its entirety. I did it, in the middle of the night. I couldn't stop reading it because I learned kind of everything I had suspected in a broad sweep, but I didn't have the facts. Whoever wrote this did an amazing job. It's a wonderful piece of journalism written by a far-left radical who obviously would be on the opposite side of everything I believe in, but doesn't matter to me because I look beyond party. I look to the truth, wherever it may lie. Many of these people are so doctrinaire, they can't look beyond their own political orientation. If you remember during the Dubai Ports deal, which you helped stop, I had Charles Schumer on the show. People said, how could you do it? And I said, because politics makes strange bedfellows. So I look beyond the politics and I look at what appears to be truth. This thing rings of the truth. Okay. Now, I read the article and I see these men. They made my flesh crawl and they still do, this type of man. These men always made me very uncomfortable as a human being, just looking at them. I almost felt as though I was watching a horror show like Halloween. I looked at their eyes and I didn't see human beings. I saw psychopaths. I'm telling you how I see them. They hire PR agencies to make them look like honest family men or fly fishermen. But if you actually watch them and look at them, what you see are empty souls who live only for the dollar. They are, in essence, psychopaths. Psychopaths come in many forms. Some are oriented around sexuality. Others are oriented around money. Some are oriented around the thrill of criminality. Others are oriented around gambling. A psychopathic behavior can take many different forms. The obsession with wealth and the obsession with money and screwing people. By the way, you have to understand it's not just the desire to make more money that drives these men. It's a desire to cripple you. They get their rocks off, in other words, in hurting you. They love seeing you suffering. They love seeing you without a pension. They love seeing you in a broken trailer park. They love it as they summer in Martha's Vineyard. Make no mistake about it, they're laughing at you. This is how I see it. Now, I want to make this a little more personal. Over the years, when I was an ordinary American before radio, and make no mistake about it, I'm in the media, so therefore I'm not an ordinary person in that regard. I have a very honored position in radio. I worked for it. You helped me get here, but whatever. What I'm saying is I'm a member of the media elite. Whether or not I accept it, I am. So therefore, I'm not you in that regard. But, for all the 40 or so years that I toiled as a researcher, writer, consultant, and every dime I earned through something I either wrote or produced as a worker. And I used to almost curse myself for being stupid. I used to say to myself, oh, here I am writing a book. It takes me 2 years, 3 years. I make back just barely enough money to cover my bills. I have to, you know, do other things in order to make a living. Why am I not smart like these guys who fly fish? Why am I not smart like these guys on Wall Street who know about CDOs and high-flying fiduciary instruments? I said, what's wrong with my gene pool that I couldn't become as smart as them? I used to ask myself, how could they be so smart? I didn't know that they weren't that smart. They were that criminal. I, unfortunately, do not have a criminal mind when it comes to money. That's the truth about me. They do. Fundamentally, they have criminal minds, but they're so beyond being an ordinary criminal that they buy politicians, so therefore they have the aura of legitimacy, according to my estimation. How do you differentiate between low-life, organized criminals who set up boiler rooms in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, who sold, ran up stocks that had no value, okay, made you the dentist or the doctor buy them for $8 when they're worth 1 cent, took their money out, you were left with nothing. They were called boiler rooms. How do these guys differ from boiler rooms? Answer, the scale is larger and they own the government. That's what this article says. What do we the people do is the question.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here we are on the Savage Nation. Welcome back. If you've been listening for an hour now, we have covered for 1 hour a new article about a Goldman Sachs, the great American bubble machine, which says that Goldman Sachs has engineered every major market manipulation since the Great Depression and are about to scam you again with the global warming bill that Obama just pushed through with Nancy Pelosi because it's the greatest criminal act in financial history. They did it to you with the tech boom. They did it to you with the housing boom. And they're about to screw you now with the carbon credits. It's all a scam. Read the article. And strangely, it came from the left-wing publication. Right now, I have a new article that just appeared moments ago in Newsmax that I'm shocked to see. The headline by Jim Myers is, British government says we did not consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. I don't know how in the world this article got published. I don't know why the British government would suddenly assert that it never consulted with President Obama's administration before placing Michael Savage on a list of people barred from entering England. Why would they do this unless they were covering their tracks? In other words, think about what I'm saying to you. What would motivate the British government to come out with an official statement saying we did not consult the United States on a Michael Savage exclusion? They're covering for the Obama administration. They're governments. They can do whatever they want. They can predate and postdate emails and letters. They've got all the power. If you got Goldman Sachs running the Treasury, Why should I trust any government with regard to what they're saying at any time about anybody? I'll read this to you. It's from Newsmax.com. I'm linking it up on MichaelSavage.com. It's a mind blower. The British government has asserted that it never consulted with President Obama's administration before placing conservative talk radio host Michael Savage on a list of people barred from entering the country. But the British government, headed by Prime Minister Gordon Brown, did acknowledge that British and American officials have since discussed Mr. Savage and Britain's policy on exclusion. That means that they're post-dating the predated conversation. In other words, they're doing it now, but they didn't do it then. I don't believe a word of this. On May 5, British Home Secretary Jackie Smith placed Savage's name on a list of 16 undesirables banned from the UK for, quote, stirring up hatred and promoting extremist views. The agency claims Savage was engaged in unacceptable behavior by seeking to provoke others to serious criminal acts, which is total rubbish. In banning Savage, Britain lumped him together with Hamas lawmaker Yunus al-Astal. And by the way, Chris Rutter, you ought to add, the Hamas lawmaker bashed in the head of a four-year-old Jewish child. He's not a Hamas lawmaker, Chris. Hamas lawmaker Yunus al-Astal was in jail in Israel for 10 years for shooting two young parents, and when he found a four-year-old Jewish girl crying, he smashed her head in with a rifle butt. And two Russian gang leaders who were imprisoned for their role in a racially motivated killing of 19 immigrants. By the way, Savage's show is not broadcast in Britain. At the time, there was some speculation that the banning of Savage, an Obama critic, could be connected to a lawsuit he filed in mid-April against Department of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano over a DHS report suggesting U.S. military veterans could be targeted by right-wing extremists. You can read the rest of the article. It says, following publication of the list, Home Office and blah, 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 have discussed the government's policy on exclusion with American officials. That is total rubbish, in my opinion. They're covering their tracks. This means beyond a doubt that it is the U.S. government that sent my name to England and said, put him on the list because we hate his guts and we'd like to neutralize him. I see their hands all over this. Do you want to comment on this? Why would the United Kingdom choose Michael Savage and put his name on a list with murderers when my show was not even broadcast in England? Why would they seek me out of all people? After all, there are others who are far more popular than me. There are very famous talk show hosts who do virtually the same thing I do. Why was I chosen? Could it have something to do with the lawsuit against Janet Napolitano? And why is it that when I appealed to Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, to intervene on my behalf about a month ago, saying you may not like my politics, but I am an American citizen, and I'm asking you to intervene on my behalf, why did Hillary Clinton refuse to do so? How will that help her or hurt her when she wants to run for the office of the presidency years from now? Would you remember that Hillary Clinton refused to act on my behalf? Or on the other hand, if Hillary did intervene right now and move to get my name off the list because it's illegal, by the way, it violates European Union law. Don't get me started. They're violating my human rights according to European Union law. If you don't believe me, look at EU law. It's on MichaelSavage.com in the original publications and the original filings, which we sent to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton gave us the middle finger. She did nothing for us. She can still redeem herself and prove that she is not partisan. She can still appeal to the half of America who detests the Democrats, who fear Obama as a Marxist and fear her as well. She can redeem herself. If our handlers had any sense, they would say this is your greatest opportunity to show yourself as a fair-minded, nonpartisan Secretary of State. It will help you when you run for office against Obama after his poll numbers collapse, Mrs. Clinton. I doubt that they have the brains to do so. By the way, if you'd like to read more about this, I have articles in one box on MichaelSavage.com. I want to thank every one of you who have taken time out to send a check or a PayPal to the Savage Defense Fund. And again, I'm going to have to say to you, I can see what's coming. If you got some extra dough and you want to send it, go ahead and do so, because I can see what's coming. I now see a total collusion between the Obama administration and the Brown administration. I see total conspiracy between the U.S. government and the British government. Why do I say that? Because there was no reason for the British government to come up out of the blue and say we didn't consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. Why would they do this all of a sudden? Why in the world would the British government do this now, July 1st? Why? Can somebody explain to me why they would do it out of the blue? Unless they were getting pressure somewhere to cover their tracks. My suspicion is that the Obama administration is worried that it will be traced back to them, and they told their British cohorts to come out with a statement that they never discussed it, but now they discussed it all of a sudden. Savage's show is not broadcast in Britain. All of these sound bites that were taken out of context and repackaged by that evil Stalinist group Media Matters, created by George Soros and Hillary Clinton, by the way, they did it specifically to smear me. Just as in the ex-Soviet Union, they smeared writers and artists and politicians and intellectuals who did not go along with the Soviet-style government. That's what was done to Michael Savage. I am the victim, and I will not rest until they are exposed. I will not rest until my name is exonerated. If you think that I've stopped fighting because I don't talk about it, you're mistaken. I'm spending a lot of time on this and a lot of money on this, and I'm getting sick and tired of it. And now that I see there's clear evidence that the Obama administration, in fact, did collude with the UK government, I'm going to fight even harder. And we will find out who in the U.S. government did this. It could bring down a government. My lawyers are working on it around the clock. They will get to the bottom of this with your help. Just as Jackie Smith was forced to resign, they say because of her allegedly inappropriate expense claims, it is interesting that she resigned the day I filed a libel lawsuit against Jackie Smith in early June. It's interesting that she resigned the very day that I filed that lawsuit, is it not? So therefore, why did Obama's minions choose today to come up with a PR story? British government, we didn't consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. Why did they ask their socialist colleagues in England, who are in free fall, in collapse, with a conservative government clearly going to take over in England? Why did they get their socialist companions in England to do this now? Does anyone have an idea on this? I'll be right back. Savage. You know, I didn't think that this topic would come up again for quite a while until I file my lawsuit, which I've been holding off on doing. Because we have been trying to use diplomatic channels to get my name off the list and go away, you know, friends, and that's the end of it. But I just saw an article came out on Newsmax. It says 5:08 p.m. Eastern. It says British government says we did not consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. Now, why would they come up with that out of the blue? What would motivate the British government to suddenly say that the U.S. government had nothing to do with putting Michael Savage on the ban list? It's been my assertion from the beginning that the Obama administration picked Michael Savage to use the fairness doctrine in a roundabout manner because they know that there's no political currency right now to push a fairness doctrine when they have to first push socialized medicine, cap and trade thievery, you name it. They have many, many other things to do and to destroy America and turn it into a Marxist state before they go after the talk show host. We're the last on their list. But they figured they could start it by putting my name over in England, making me into the equivalent of a murderer for speaking my mind. After all, Jackie Smith said that I actually engaged in criminal behavior, which is clearly libelous. She didn't say that I said things that are hateful, hurtful, or threatening. She said I engaged in criminal behavior. Now, if you think that free speech is criminal behavior, then you're ready to live in the ex-Soviet Union. I'm not. And I will seek the truth continuously. That's what I'm going to do. Right now, I have a biographer who's working on my life story. This is going to just make the book that much more interesting to millions of readers in England and America. Eventually, the truth will come out. How it will come out, why it'll come out, I don't know. But that the British government would come out today and say, we didn't consult the United States. Who asked them to say that? Why did they say it all of a sudden? Is anyone listening to this show who can answer that question? Why would this article appear July 1, 2009? Nobody forced the British government to say that it never consulted with President Obama's administration before putting Michael Savage on a list of people barred from entering the country. No one said that. And by the way, if this keeps up, I've done some investigation. Apparently, the Republic of Ireland is not in the United Kingdom. I'm pleased to hear it. I like the Irish an awful lot. And if I choose to go to that region of the world, I think I'll fly into Shannon Airport or wherever it is, and I think I'll have a press conference across the border in Ireland, and I will speak about freedom of speech from Ireland, not from the oppressive royalist nation of England. Miami, Florida. Lori, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. You know, the Obama administration is proving indirectly once again that it is modeled on the Soviet model. And this business of the UK coming out now and denying that they consulted or were consulted by the Obama administration is typical of that Soviet model. Remember when the Soviets would deny that they'd done something, you could bet your life that the opposite was true?
Yeah, but why today? Why did it come up today? Why today? Why did it come up out of the blue? There was no necessity for them to do this.
The pressure was on. And I think that what they want to do is they want to quell any sort of support you may be giving for any of the Tea Parties.
Well, first of all, a leading conservative member of parliament in Britain is the individual asking what discussions the British government has had with the U.S. administration on the creation of the list of foreign nationals barred from entry into the U.K., with particular reference to the inclusion of Michael Savage in that list. So the Conservative Party is my hope here. I have given up hoping that Gordon Brown would ever do anything that is correct and for democracy. Gordon Brown is a lifetime left-wing radical who will only do evil. He has wrecked the economy of England. He has stolen the freedom of the British people. And so, therefore, I have no hopes that he will do the right thing and avoid this lawsuit, and I'm going to go ahead and have to drop this lawsuit. Now, I have to tell you right now, I've been told that it could cost me approximately $1 million to do this. I mean, I haven't given you numbers until now. And England is different than the United States in lawsuits that I learned. I kind of much knew it. First of all, their libel laws are different, and it's much easier to prove libel in England than here. That's the good news for me, because she did libel me by saying I engage in criminal acts, which I didn't. Okay, that's number one. The other news is this, and here's the somewhat bad news. If you bring a lawsuit in England and you lose, you pay all of the other guy's fees, the other side's fees. Unlike in America, which is run by criminal gangsters, the legal profession is run by criminal gangsters, where they encourage lawsuits, clogging the courts, destroying the law itself. In England, if you lose, you pay the other side. I'm not going to lose this one. I'm going to win it, because my lawsuit is very narrowly defined with regard to her statement that I committed criminal acts. I certainly have not committed criminal acts. She may not like what I said, even though what I said was not what she thinks I said, because my show is never broadcast in England. So therefore, I will file this lawsuit. Now I'm going to do it. I was trying to use the diplomacy, but I could see now that this group of scoundrels in the Gordon Brown administration are so deeply enmeshed in the Obama administration that I have no chance of getting any fairness from them. Therefore, I will seek a jury trial in England. That's all there is to it. And then when my biography comes out or my book comes out, I'm going to have two things coming out next year, God willing. One is a book called Banned in Britain, which I hope to have out around Labor Day. This will be in the book. This story is going in that book. And then there's the biography being written by Professor Ellis Washington that will be out in, I don't know, in a year. We don't know. That's a long, big project. So there's a lot going on. I usually become very productive in the summers. One thing I will not be doing this summer is jogging in Marcy Park. I will not be flying east to jog in that park. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. British government says we did not consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. It's intriguing to me that Newsmax would publish this, and I wonder why they published it right now and why all of a sudden Britain would be saying that they had nothing to do with the Obama administration. What is going on? Why in the world would Gordon Brown say that they didn't discuss it before the exclusion, but they have since discussed it? You know about post-dated checks? Well, let's say you want to pay for something, but you don't have the money in the bank. So let's say today is July 1, you write July 10th on it. I believe these discussions occurred and they put July 1st on it, or whenever, June 30th on it, but they actually discussed it last year. in order to try to bring in the fairness doctrine in advance, going after Michael Savage first with a little help from his friends.
Savage.
All right, so I opened the show. I spent an hour talking about Goldman Sachs and the manipulation of our currency and our government and our financial system. And now it's like a shock. Article comes out of Newsmax today saying that the British government says we didn't consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. So we just emailed Chris Ruddy of Newsmax and asked him, you know, how did this happen? And he said, well, his writer went to Nigel Evans, a leading conservative member of Parliament in Britain, and he addressed the question to the Secretary of State for the Home Department, asking the following: what discussions his department has had with the U.S. administration on the creation of the list of foreign nationals barred from entry to the U.K., with particular reference to the inclusion of Michael Savage on that list? Then the Socialist Labor Party answers, the Home Office did not consult with the U.S. administration about the creation of the list of foreign nationals who were excluded from the U.K. on unacceptable behavior grounds. Now, this is interesting. Again, they're using the word behavior. Yeah, I could see a guy who smashed in a four-year-old child's head. I could see Russian skinheads who killed 11 people. I could see Kim Jong-il on the list. I could see Reverend Wright on the list. I could see a lot of Americans on the list who aren't on the list. But I'm only a talk show host. That's not behavior, is it? Is speech behavior now? So now speech is behavior? 1984, Brave New World, speech is now behavior. They're covering their tracks, in my opinion. That means they did it. Because they said, however, following publication of the list, Home Office officials have discussed the government's policy on exclusion with American officials. I believe that they're postdating or predating, postdating these discussions. That's my opinion. Now, apparently in England, there's a different standard. Under the rules of Parliament, a Parliament member's question must be answered honestly, which means if you catch another member of Parliament lying, whether it be through mail or whatever, they will be indicted. They'll lose their seat. It's much different than America, where if a congressman or senator is not caught lying, they lose their seat. It means that they've lost their edge. And so, therefore, the British government is on record that they answered this honestly. Well, you know what? We'll see what my law firm in England finds out. We'll see whether the emails were predated, postdated. Of course, they could have had the discussions in person in Martha's Vineyard. It seems that libs all go to Martha's Vineyard at the same time, whether they be fake First Amendment lawyers who represent Lenny Bruce and give documentaries about the First Amendment and freedom of speech when it comes to pornographers and things of that nature. But when it comes to Michael Savage, they say to me, give me $250,000 and I'll protect your First Amendment rights. And it won't even be done through the courts. It'll be done through diplomacy, but I can't guarantee anything. That you don't see in the documentaries from the First Amendment lawyers, all liberals. First Amendment lawyers that went to Venezuela with Jimmy Carter to certify Hugo Chavez. First Amendment Democrats, good people. No different than Goldman Sachs. A pox upon their house. A pox upon them to the third generation. Unto all of them. What they've done to this country, these liars. They would represent the hell, they would represent the Nazi party, but they wouldn't represent Michael Savage unless he put down $250,000 on the table. And then they said, we won't even guarantee anything. And then they do a documentary about their highfalutin lying sons of guns, all of them. All liberals, all from New York, all Goldman Sachs types. They made their living representing pornographers and other evil people in the country. And me, they had the nerve to say to me, oh, yeah, we can get your name off the list, but we're going to have to talk to people. It's going to cost money. $250,000, we can't guarantee anything. But let's say if you were a drug dealer or a pornographer, we might do it for free just for the principle of it, because that we believe in. And by the way, we're doing a movie that's coming out on the First Amendment where we make ourselves look like Snow White. Oh, yeah, one of our family members is going to do a movie on us about how good we are. Like Snow White, we're going to do a movie which, so honest man, we really believe in the First Amendment. As long as it doesn't come to you. You talked about jaundiced. West Virginia, Greg, your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation.
Long-time listener, Mike. I have an idea as to why the story may have been released at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that this seems to be a pattern with this government, that when there is embarrassing information to be released, they release it right before a major holiday to squelch it.
Yes. In other words, this came out July 1st when most people are traveling and there's no news. And many of the talking heads are on the road.
I called. I thought it may have been a little bit early for this to be, but there's so much other news out there. I think that they felt it would be safe.
Well, that's right. Michael Jackson's bigger news. The OxyClean, the man who sells toilet bowl cleaner, they could always run that one again. There's Farrah Fawcett's corpse they can pick at.
Yeah, freedom of speech.
Yeah, but you got to remember, Greg, here's the thing. I got 10 million listeners. They know what's going on. They're not going to forget this when they come to vote again. They all vote. I have 10 million listeners. I can't say they all like me, but I have 8 to 10 million listeners. They all vote, by the way. Here's an opportunity for them to decide which side of the tracks they're really on. Do they believe in truth and freedom, or do they believe in lies and tyranny? That's all. Thank you for the call. San Diego, Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I got two things to say real quick. Hello?
Okay, say it, please.
Okay, number one, the reason why they busted out with that story in the UK is simply because your attorneys in the UK are starting to turn over grades. And now,
Mark, I can't hear you. It's a bad connection. I'm very sorry. I'm sure that... Call on a better phone line. Screener, please don't give me calls that I can't hear. If I can't hear them, the listeners are turning the show off. Rule number one, talk radio. No bad connections. Let's try the next one. Betsy, Sacramento, welcome to the program.
Michael, thank you for your patriotism. I have a comment and two questions. First, I believe you're getting too close for comfort for them. I think that Hillary did not defend you is the first clue that the government was involved in something. I wonder who they're talking to now, and why they're talking to anyone now about this.
Well, that's right. That's the next thing I want my attorneys to get, which is who they're talking to now and why.
To pursue the lawsuit.
That's right. So that goes right to my attorneys in England. Now that you admit you are talking to the U.S. government about Michael Savage, who in the U.S. government are you talking with, and why are you talking to them?
Absolutely. Why now?
Why July 1st?
You know, anytime. You know, if they're making their decision as an independent from the government, why talk to them at all? And my first question is, what is the value, in your opinion, of petitioning the government? I believe that if there's any value in it, we should petition a congressman to be forced to read all the bills that come before them and take an 80% proficiency test before they're allowed to vote on anything.
That we are living in a web republic on the equivalent of a banana republic. I believe we now live in a third world nation. I believe that our Congress is the equivalent of a third world Congress. And I believe that requiring anything of these scoundrels will go nowhere. I believe we're being run by a gangster regime, both left and right. That's what I think. Houston, Texas. Gene, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
They said that they didn't contact Obama's government beforehand, but did they also say that Obama's government didn't contact them beforehand?
Yeah, they're all lawyers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right, and they also didn't say that it could have been somebody outside the government who they contacted who then spoke to the U.S. government, right?
That's true, but you know...
For example, it could have been somebody, let's say, in an honest group like Media Matters, who they talked with, right?
Yes, but if they
who then communicated through third parties with the U.S. government. I mean, and we're just giving us an example. We don't know that there's any relationship whatsoever. We know that Media Matters is a sterling organization that believes in the truth and honesty and freedom of opinion.
Right.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I did not expect this today. I didn't come here with this prepared. I came prepared to talk about Goldman Sachs from the article I read last night after watching the horror movie Halloween up till 3 o'clock in the morning. And this just came to me at the end of the show in the last hour. that suddenly the United Kingdom says they didn't consult with the Obama administration about Michael Savage? Well, why now? Why are they suddenly saying this? What motivated them to say that in the last few days? Well, I'm going to have my attorneys in England contact the Conservative Party member who says he quizzed the Socialist Party about this, and we'll try to get some of the documentation as to who or what or when or how. It's going to cost more money, a lot of money again. Now, I told you I haven't said a word to you about the Savage Defense Fund today. I am going to say it to you. If you feel like sending $10 or whatever, go ahead and do so. Go to michaelsavage.com. The address is there, or you can pay by PayPal. Period. End of story. 1-800-449-8255. Spokane, Washington. Pam, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, I think the reason that it's taken them this long to cover their tracks, they've gotten rid of all the emails, they've gotten rid of any telephone calls that they might have passed back and forth to the U.S., and now they feel comfortable enough to say that, oh, no, we didn't consult the U.S.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, when you're the government, you can get away with anything.
Yeah.
So, therefore, they can say that they didn't. Who's going to prove that they did?
Right, and now, I mean, they've had so much time just to get rid of...
All I can say is this. It doesn't matter to me whether they did or they didn't do so. All I know is my name is on a list with murderers, and they're claiming that my speech is behavior. I think that should alarm everybody in America. Anybody who believes in free speech should be very alarmed that your speech can now be declared behavior, because speech is not behavior. Speech is speech, and behavior is behavior. Is that correct?
That's correct. And
right.
It's just
but the Communist Socialist Administration in England has made speech and behavior one and the same. That should worry every liberal as much as every conservative in the United States of America and in the United Kingdom. And I hope it does. Support the Savage Legal Fund, Michael Savage Legal Fund. Write it down, 110 Pacific Avenue, Box 135, San Fran 94111. I'll read it one more time. Savage Legal Fund, 110 Pacific Avenue, Box 135, San Fran 94111. It's on michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Amazing to me that you don't see what's going on in the world and how the noose is tightening around all of our necks, how there is a collusion going on to eliminate the freedoms that you have. Not totally at first, certainly, but on a minor scale. It starts on a minor scale. I studied Hitler Germany, and I was amazed when I started to study it as a youngster that the very first law, at least I remember this to be true, the very first law that the Nazis passed, or one of the first laws on racial issues, was excluding Jews from Aryan swimming pools. It was so benign that the Jews said, who wants to swim there anyway? What do I care? That's how it started. It starts easy. Now I remind you, this is a very light thing. It's just Michael Savage. He's a right winger. What do I care if they say his speech is behavior? What do I care? I'm protected. I'm a liberal. My guy is in office. Whoa, this is great. We love seeing him suffer. Well, it's me today and it's you tomorrow. You may not think so. Study the Maoist revolution in China and see who wound up killed. If you think it was only the capitalists, you're mistaken. Half of the Red Guards kill the other half of the Red Guards. That's what happens when you unleash gangsters in a country. So I am warning you that you better get behind Michael Savage right now. I warn you, I'm the only one on the firing line. I am the only one. The others make a lot of sound and fury, but I don't see them being banned in England. Why is it that they're not banned in England? Why is Rush not banned in England? Why is Hannity not banned in England? Why is the hemorrhoid not banned in England? Because they don't pose a threat to anyone. That's why. I mean, I wish they did. I wish they were all banned in England. I'd feel a lot better. But they seem to have singled me out. I'm used to it. All my life I've been singled out, whether it's the fourth grade, I won the presidency of the fourth grade class, and my teacher said that the election was canceled. I learned what fascism was in the fourth grade. I was very popular. The kids voted for me. I became president. She said, Michael can't be president. They said, oh, why? She said, because I said so. I'm sure that today she would be a happy camper in the Obama administration. And you think it's a joke? Fine. It's not a joke. Chicago, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, thanks for taking my call. Just one quick comment. You know, this whole thing with the British government, it smells, and I'll tell you what it smells like. It smells like David Axelrod to me, and it also reeks of an AstroTurf. And but to the likes that we've never seen.
Wait, what do you mean by AstroTurf?
What I mean is the manipulation of the media and the masses, creating something out of nothing, trying to make a perception reality. And that's exactly what David Axelrod...
Yes, they're trying to make me into a bad guy when I'm actually a good guy. They're trying to make me evil when I'm actually good. They're trying to take a decent man and crucifying him. Yes, it goes way back to Roman times. What the Obama administration and the English have done here is, in essence, what the ancients did to a biblical figure. And I don't want to get into that because people are going to start to think I'm crazy. But let me tell you something. There's crucifixion going on here.
Absolutely. They can't come out, Michael, and tell you, hey, we think Michael's so bad that he would bash a four-year-old's head in with the butt of a rifle. So what do? They make the perception that you are actually like that person by coming up with a fake news story.
Let me tell you something. They don't even say that the Hamas individual on the list did that. What they say is he's a Hamas lawmaker. They don't even report anymore that he killed two young parents in Israel and the baby was crying and hiding in an attic. And after killing her mother, this Hamas lawmaker took the rifle butt and smashed the child's head in because she was a Jew. They don't report that, do they? They call him a Hamas lawmaker. Do you understand what I'm saying here, John?
Absolutely. When was the last time that reality was ever reported in any news channel coming out of Hamas or Al Jazeera or any of those stations? It's all...
No. I mean, the British don't even say he smashed in the head of a baby. The British call him a Hamas lawmaker. They don't say he smashed the head of a Jewish baby's head in with a rifle butt, because that would be too horrible. Instead, they say, well, Michael Savage is an extremist like the Hamas lawmaker. So, in other words, there's a blurring now of the lines between behavior, i.e. smashing in a child's head with a rifle butt, and speaking forcefully about borders, language, and culture. Make no mistake about why I have been targeted. The statements that they have are all taken from Media Matters, in my estimation. Virtually every soundbite that they played to say that I'm a bad guy were taken out of context. They can be found on the Media Matters website. It's Stalinist activity. I have not yet gotten around to suing Media Matters. First this, and then I guarantee you we're going to find out if they did it. And they'll say, well, they're protected in doing so. Well, I will remind you that you're not protected if you take people's statements out of context to paint a different picture of them. I want to remind you that there are laws in the land. You cannot make a person into a criminal who is not a criminal, and particularly if it costs him something. And particularly, my good friends in Media Matters, when there is malice intended. If you study libel laws or you study slander laws, in America, one of the principal things you must prove, it's a very high standard, is that there was malice intended. I would like to ask everyone listening to this show, if you think that Media Matters does not have malice intended in its activities against Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, Bill O'Reilly, and others. They take our statements out of context. They seem never to take the statements of liberals and publish them, do they? So they're focused only on political opponents. They're an arm of the Obama administration. They were created by money from George Soros. Hillary Clinton boasted about creating Media Matters. We have that on tape. And so therefore, not only do they have malice intended, but they also are violating, in my opinion, all nonprofit status by focusing so hardly on an opposition political organization, opposition political figures. They are, in essence, an arm of a political organization. And as such, if we still had a government, they would lose their nonprofit status. This may or may not happen in years to come, but we will do the best we can because as I speak, a very powerful group of intelligent journalists are working on an expose of Media Matters, where they get their money from, what they do with their money, and what salaries they take. Very soon you will see all of their names, and you will see the faces and the masks ripped off, and you will see who they actually are. Not from me. It's way out of my hands. Again, go to michaelsavage.com, see the article. British say they didn't consult the United States government, the Obamas, on Michael Savage exclusion. Liar, liar, flags on fire.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Viva Honduras, Viva la Revolucion by Ellis Washington. It's a must-read from WorldNet Daily. It is not a coup against democracy that went on there. It is a coup for democracy, as stated by Michael Savage. And a Democrat gets $3.5 billion in sweeteners for the climate bill. Now, you got to understand that cap and trade is a complete and total scam. It is a fraud that is going to make trillions of dollars for the gangsters who stole your savings. If you think that Bernie Madoff is a crook, you are right. He is a piker compared to what the Democrats have just done with the so-called climate change bill or cap and trade. It is the biggest scam ever seen in the history of the world. From the Washington Post, we see that Senator Dan Inouye, a Hawaii senator, helped steer money to a bank he founded. Unbelievable to me that we are no longer living in America. We're living in a banana republic. This is what has gone on in the third world. We are now a third world nation. Oh, and by the way, from NPR, Obama is pushing to keep White House logs private. He did call for transparency, but that was then. This is now. According to the Gallup poll, more Americans see Democrats as too liberal. Wow, that's amazing. And yes, no criminal exposure for Ruth Madoff. Can you believe this? Ruth was not aware of her husband's scam. No. They only talked about bridge, I'm sure of that. The crackdown on the Iranian protesters is still ongoing. People are dying, people are being tortured, people are being arrested because our administration failed to do anything but issue a few frilly words which embolden Iran's regime even more so. Joining us now is Jeffrey Kuhner to report on this.
Michael, very few issues touch me and frankly frighten me as much as the prospect that now that the Jews are staring at. This to me is clearly now the ramifications and the consequences of what has happened in Iran. For as the students rose up and as the protesters rose up against that odious fascist regime in Tehran, and as we stood by and did nothing, and as they have now been slowly gunned down in the streets, the mullahs are now back in power. The Nazi Persian dictator Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is now firmly back in the saddle. And privately, Michael, what I have been hearing is that he is now saying to everybody, quote, Israel's days are numbered. Now Iran's leadership is 9 months to maybe a year away from a nuclear bomb. Publicly and privately, Ahmadinejad has now repeatedly said that he will take this nuclear bomb and he will detonate it in Jerusalem and on Tel Aviv. That he will now, quote, wipe Israel off the map. And not only that, Michael, he is now vowing to finish what Adolf Hitler started, the final solution of the Jewish question. And Michael, I have to tell you this. In all of my years in journalism, I have never seen Israeli intelligence officials this panicked and this worried. They now know they are facing their most ruthless, fanatical, and determined foe since Adolf Hitler. And they are now privately bracing for the possibility of a nuclear war. Israel now is under tremendous pressure from the Obama administration to not launch attacks upon Iran's nuclear facilities. In fact, Michael, I can tell you this as an exclusive to the Savage Nation. Having spoken to people within the Israeli intelligence community, what my sources have confirmed irrevocably is that Obama, in private meetings with Netanyahu, has told him face to face, you are not to bomb Iran. As far as the Obama administration is concerned, they now believe that an Iranian bomb is inevitable and that they can deal with it. As Obama told Netanyahu, quote unquote, what my sources told me, we can live with an Iranian bomb. And if we can live with it, you should live with it. And Michael, here to me is the fundamental seminal question that we are now facing. Israel now is confronted with an existential threat. And at this moment, the Israelis now have to decide, are they going to allow Ahmadinejad and the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, the man who really pulls the strings in Iran, a nuclear bomb and potentially a weapon that will wipe the Jews off the face of this earth, and it will now end, to me anyway, Jewish civilization as we've known it. And if they do not respond, Michael, Iran will take this bomb, they will launch a devastating nuclear strike on Israel, and then they will consolidate their power all across the Middle East and launch a global holy war against the United States and the West. And as this goes on, Ahmadinejad and the mullahs have vowed that even if Israel responds in the face of a nuclear attack, the Iranian leadership is willing to sacrifice millions of fellow Iranians. They believe that in the end, Michael, that Iran can survive a nuclear exchange with Israel, but Israel can't because it is too small. This is the level of fanatical evil that lurks in the very heart and is embedded in the very nature of this regime. And so, Michael, as we look back upon the last 2 weeks of the democratic revolution in Iran, we now clearly see this was maybe history's greatest opportunity to bring the mullahs down. And instead, presented with this perhaps once-in-a-generation opportunity to bring true freedom and democracy and human rights, to open up the regime in Iran, we have stood back. We have squandered maybe the greatest opportunity to bring peace in our time throughout the Middle East. And as this went on, Michael, Barack Obama put realpolitik above principled idealism. He put realpolitik and his own vanity and ego above American national interests and, frankly, the interests of our closest ally, Israel. Because what we could have done was Obama could have come out at the beginning of this crisis and he could have said, we stand with the Iranian people. With every bullet that you fire, with every protester that you beat, with every journalist that you imprison, we, the United States, will lead the free world against you. We will not recognize your regime. We will impose punishing sanctions. You will not get a drop of gasoline imported into Iran. Your economy will come to a standstill. And more than that, we will meddle. Because now you have committed an act of aggression against the Iranian people, against the Iranian nation, against the Iranian democracy, and by extension, against the international community. We stand with freedom-loving people everywhere. Had he said that, Michael, it would have shaken the fragile, volatile, weak regime of Ahmadinejad to its very core and its very foundation. Instead, Michael, we had mealy-mouthed words, meek, empty words from a meek, empty president. Finally, our coward-in-chief went to the cameras and said he condemns the Iranian actions. He condemns the mullahs. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. President, but you're a dollar short and a day late. And now the people of Iran are facing the ultimate price. And Michael, for the last 2 weeks, I have been in constant contact with Iranian dissidents, with people behind the closed walls of Iranian society. And let me tell you what they're telling me. They are being murdered and beaten and imprisoned. In the middle of the night, the feared Bezij, the fascist militia, are going around into student dorms and house by house. And they are beating, torturing, and imprisoning leaders of the protest movement and pro-democracy activists. Ahmadinejad has now unleashed his police terror state. And Michael, I want to say this now to the people of Iran, because many Iranian exiles and Iranian Americans actually listen to your show. They are now doing everything they can to get information into their country, because now the internet's been cut off to some degrees. Any contact with the outside world has been cut off. Now their only lifeline is to the Iranian exile community, especially here in America. I want to speak now directly to them. My friends, I want to say this to you clearly and unequivocally. You are heroes and martyrs for one of the greatest causes of our time. Remember that you now speak for the Iranian nation, and you represent everything that is best and brightest and holiest among you. You have stood up against the most evil fascist dictatorship of our time, and you have been abandoned by Barack Hussein Obama and many of the leaders in the West. But I want to assure you of one thing, that maybe you have been abandoned by the president in the White House. You have not been abandoned by the people of America. We stand with you shoulder to shoulder. You stand for a great Persian nation, a great Persian culture, and a great Persian civilization. And ever since 9/11, we in America have been asking, where is the other side of the Muslim world? Where is the other face of the Muslim world? The face of the Muslim world that craves freedom and democracy and dignity. And you have now shown it through your actions. You are one of the greatest generations that a great Iranian nation has produced. Your cause is just. Your cause is right. And I want to say these final words to you. They have broken your bodies, but they cannot and will not break your spirit. And your spirit of the last 2 weeks has ignited a flame that will keep the Iranian nation and Iranian democracy alive for generations to come. We back you. We support you. Keep up your good fight. And I want you to know, it is always darkest before the daylight. Your cause is right, and you will triumph, and the American people will support you heart, mind, and soul. God bless you. Michael, back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the report, Jeff. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. Savage. Well, here's some of the topics that we touched on today, in addition to meatball recipes on the Savage Nation. Obama's vacation. Oh, yeah. The media is now reporting that Obama's going to take a vacation on Martha's Vineyard. Now, I know why he's going to Martha's Vineyard. That's where all of the bankers from Wall Street, who he bailed out, have summer homes. You won't read that in the paper. He didn't pick Martha's Vineyard because he particularly loves it. He picked it because his friends on Wall Street invited him to see how else they can fleece the American people. Now, even though taking a vacation this year is a big deal, it's interesting to me that the media constantly criticize Bush for taking too much vacation time. We don't hear that this time around. And then I've asked you if you're taking a vacation somewhere, and is that somewhere in America where you can go where liberals do not bow in Chinese restaurants? Is there such a thing as a conservative vacation destination? And then Obama's media blitzkrieg. Every time the television is turned on, there he is. Every day, another press conference, another town hall meeting. If it's not Michael Jackson or them not demanding that Mark Sanford resign, it's Obama at another Soviet-style healthcare plan meeting. Every other day, another town hall meeting. Every morning, there's a speech. How we need health care reform. Every hour, one of his flunkies on a cable news show talking about the need for socialized medicine. Goebbels, who was Hitler's propaganda minister, said that if you repeat a big lie often enough, people will eventually believe it. It looks like that where Obama's taking his press ideas from. It's like the same thing with everything. Everything is an action figure. They wind up governors. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Europe moves to the right, America swings to the left. And you ain't seen nothing yet. Obama's just warming up. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Go to the website. Go ahead. Look up the stories. Come on, I'm not taking calls on hair loss. Stop it. They're putting real crackpot callers up here. No, I'll tell you, you want me to talk about hair loss? What do I know about hair loss? I lost hair. What should I tell you about that? I love that guy who wrote me the letter. He wants his first year in marriage to be worry-free. You hear this? I should pay for it. I remember when I had my first child, I would have loved a 1 year worry-free. I haven't had a day worry-free yet. I'm 67. He wants a year. The chief guru told him to have a year worry-free years so he could set off in life and do good for the world. Very nice. I'll tell you what my first year of marriage was with my first child. It was working 17 days a week. I would have loved a worry-free year. It would have been lovely to stay home and stroke my baby, you know, kiss my wife. Where does this come from, this idea that a religious person doesn't work? Who ever heard this? This is not even a biblical mandate. If you go back to the Bible, work was essentially a part of a human's life, whether they were religious or not. The guys in the temple, the Sanhedrin, the guys who condemned Christ, how many of them were there in the Sanhedrin? 10? I forgot already. Remember the movie The Passion of Jesus? There were like three judges who said, no, he didn't do that much. Don't kill him. Remember that? The other guy says, no, he's a troublemaker. Put him on the banned list. Give him the cross and tell him to take a walk. No, he didn't do anything, man. He was just telling people not to be too greedy. That's enough. We don't need him around. He's trouble. He's interfering with the giving. He's interfering with the giving. We need the money. And the people are liable to wise up. Put him on the cross. He didn't do anything, three of them said. We don't care what you said. Seven said condemn him. That should go over well in Crown Heights. Yeah, that's 1-800-449-825. You know, to each his own. Leave me out of it, though. I don't know. The whole thing is getting to me now. It's like it's all coming full circle. Everything in my life is coming back to where it started. Just that I'm older with it. That's all. Just older. No different. I'm the same height. And you think about it. Nothing. Your height doesn't really change over time. Think about that. Well, it does. If you live long enough, everything goes and you shrink. That's the real kicker that God gives you. If you're lucky enough to live long enough, you lose every function in your body and you shrink in size. Perfect. What a reward for living a long and wonderful life. You shrivel up and every organ goes. Terrific. Great. What a scene. What a scene this is. Every day a joy. Every joy is every second another joy.
Savage.
Playing Hawaiian music now in honor of Senator Dan Inouye. Play it louder. I want to hear the Hawaiian music. You see, the good Senator Inouye, who once had a distinguished record as a World War II hero, in fact, he left an arm in Europe as a great American hero, now he has thrown his reputation away. How? Apparently, he used his powers as a senator to demand that the Treasury Department help a bank that he just happens to be a board member on, that he just happened to found, that he just happens to have his most money invested in. Would you cut that music out? They can't hear me. Don't you have anything better than that piece of music? That's it. That's it. Now, that's the mood we want to create. Anyway, Senator Dan Inouye had his staff contact federal regulators to ask about the bailout application of an ailing Hawaiian bank that he had helped to establish and where he has invested the bulk of his personal estate. Well, 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 that's terrible. You know, break that record, will you please? I'm sick of that, too. When you hear about this kind of corruption, everything seems sickening. Let's try one more piece of music. Not bad, not bad at all. Now, here's the worst part. 2 weeks after the inquiry from Inouye's office, Central Pacific Financial announced that the Treasury Department would inject $135 million of taxpayer money. Oh, my God. Something is rotten in the state of Hawaii other than the music. Oh, please, get rid of the Hawaiian music. Give me something fast, like 3 minutes of rock and roll.
Let's go to the hop. Well, you can swing and you can groove and you can really
now, you're talking.
At the hop. Well,
at the hop.
The smoothest and the music is the coolest at the hop. All the cats and the chicks can.
What are they doing now? If they're not dead from a heart attack already, they're in a retirement home in Florida deciding whether they want Italian or Chinese for dinner. But wait till it gets to the piano solo. Wait. There it is. Amazing. Where did that energy of music go? Where in the world did it go? Play some music. Make believe it's Rock and Roll Friday. I'm already hitting a bad... There you go. That's perfect. I love this. Who is it? Don't say it. Hold it. It's an Alzheimer's test. Hold on. Don't say a word. Not a word. No, not a word. No hints. Bobby Darin. Okay, Beyond the Sea. I'm slower. I can tell you just by telling. I test my mind like that was slow. I can see I'm a little trouble now. I'm going to do this once or twice a week now and see my memory right on the air. You'll see it go downhill over the years. Till eventually I'm like, hello, this is the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. Welcome to the show. We got quite a day for you here. Darn it, I get nothing on it. I don't get a rise out of this. It's nothing to me. How long ago? Gratazura, forget about it. You know, heard it. At that time, it was okay. It's nothing anymore. None of that does anything for me. Nothing. I've reached a point where nothing moves me at all. An animal, maybe. The dog. Caring for an animal. Humans? Forget about it. My father taught me. I fought with him day and night. He said to me, it's a dog-eat-dog world. And I was like Mr. Idealist from Queens College. All the teachers were communists from those days. Every one of them was a commie. Every last one of them, a left-wing radical. Came to America, kissed the earth, and then spit on America. Got a job at Queens College and tried to inculcate the very thing they ran from in Europe. So I was like brainwashed as a kid in college. Oh, yeah, the poor are oppressed. People kept them down. Right, sure. Yeah, everyone keeps them down. How could some poor rise up if all the poor are kept down? How do you explain that? So, you know, whatever. He said, oh, dog-eat-dog world. You'll find out. No, it won't. People are nice. Yeah, right, sure, people are nice. Cynic is cynic, what can I tell you? It is a dog-eat-dog world, like I didn't know it. It's not that I've done so badly. I mean, I'm pretty aggressive, and I'm very ambitious, and I have been all my life, and I'm proud of it. That makes it sound like it's like a crime. Being ambitious is a crime to the loser. Do you know that? I knew him when he was young. He was always trying to get ahead. Duh. What were you trying to do? Smoke dope? Idiot? That's some guy I knew. He writes obituaries for a religious newspaper. Never amounted to Jack, you know what. Thought he'd be Hemingway. He wound up Hemingway's shoeshine boy. So someone wrote an article on me 2 years ago. He went and stabbed me in the back. He said, oh yeah, he was always ambitious. Like that's a curse. Mr. Fair-minded. Oh my God, what people... They really resent people who get anything, and they don't. It's the truth. People are jealous. The seven cardinal sins. I'm guilty of them, some of them. You didn't hear me. I figured I'd get hit with the religious fanatics when I said I'm through with fanaticism. I wish I could tell you why and explain the whole story, what happened, but I can't. It's too personal for me to get into it. And I think the names have to be... protected to protect the guilty here, and I don't think there's any way I can tell you what happened without giving away who I am speaking about. So I think I'll leave that one go because I don't actually dislike the individuals that I'm now completely through with forever in the religious world, but they're never going to see a red cent from me, I can tell you that. It's unbelievable to me. Let me put it to you, how can I do it in a way? I was donating small amounts of money to certain groups, okay? Add the elephants to this. I'm reaching that point where they're 501c3s. They have to be a nonprofit group. Don't write me any letters from a prison that you need money because you were a misunderstood genius. Please, you're not. It has to be a 501c3. So I'm mainly animal groups and environmental groups. You know, the pelicans, the manatees, the elephants, the leatherback turtles, the bears that are being tortured by the wonderful kind Chinese that they torture in cages over there in the wonderful sensitive land. You know, we're the bad ones. They're the good ones. It's Obama, the same thing. They torture people every day of the week in the Muslim countries, but we're the torturers and they're the good guys. Everything upside down, Obama. The whole world is upside down to him. What'd you expect? You asked for change and you got it. Now we're bad and they're all good. The Muslim world is suddenly good. The women can't drive. They perform clitorectomies in 80% of the Muslim world, but it's a wonderful place to live. Not one peep out of the women's movement. Revisionist history. So one of the groups, let us say, that I was going to donate a small amount of money to was a religious group. And as part of my charter as a man giving money, I have to find out how the money is going to be spent. You have to ask. You can't just give money to a group without getting an answer from them in advance. Otherwise, you could be violating the tax code. And also, their 501c3 status could be challenged, incidentally. And you know many charities are rackets. You know that. And if the government really wants to make money, they really ought to go with a fine-tooth comb through the 501c3s in this country. I can guarantee you. They'd pull in about $200 billion the first year. Okay? Put me in charge of that one, Mr. Obama. I'd gladly work for the government for a buck a year. I could bring in probably $100 billion for the dollar. I know just where to start. You're starting with these. So I start inquiring, blah, 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 what are you going to do with the money? And comes back to me that one of the religious individuals who was going to receive the money tells me that he's going to take some of the donation I'm giving, the whole thing, to take a year off and to be with his wife worry-free for a year, because that's what he was taught. And I couldn't believe what I was reading. So I say, you have some nerve asking me to subsidize a year without working. I kill myself each day trying to do right in the world, and nobody subsidizes me. Moreover, nonprofit tax laws prohibit us from donating to the upkeep of an individual. All funds must be limited to the meaning of the tax code, only for organizations, not individuals. And then I go on and I say, religion is about service and about work. Religious people are supposed to have a profession or a trade. And I say, I have some advice for you. Learn a trade or you'll be running after people for money the rest of your life. You are a good person, but you need someone to tell you this. The old days are over. Money is tight. People don't have as much as they did 10 to 20 years ago. As the years go by, it will get harder, not easier. You still have time to learn a trade. Use it wisely. So, I mean, it's a hard thing to send somebody, but I think I did this young man a favor. To spend the rest of your life as a mendicant and asking people to subsidize your lifestyle and using God as a weapon, to be honest with you. I'm sorry, I'm not into it. I work too hard for every dime. And I know everyone else who works for a living in my family. Everybody works all day long, every day of the week. So just because you hold God up as a over your head, like you know God and I don't, you know what? I know God as well as you do. And I can find God by going out into the bay and looking at a bird laying an egg. If I see a baby seal swimming toward the boat, I see God. If I see a group of pelicans flying in a V formation and they're shifting point as they're flying, I see God going back millions of years. I see the wisdom of God in how the animals have the brains to shift point so that there's always a leader in the pack. Okay? So I don't necessarily need the mumbo jumbo to get there. Thank you. I'll be right back. Savage. During World War II, Hitler used the Blitzkrieg or lightning war technique to conquer all of Europe. With swift and overwhelming force, the German Blitzkrieg combined the coordinated air and armor attack to destroy enemy resistance before it had a chance to respond. Today, the Blitzkrieg is no longer a military tactic. It is a political one, and it's been used most effectively by Obama within the media. Chairman Obama's Blitzkrieg works like this. There is always a story they're pushing through the media. There is always an event at which he or Michelle are speaking. There is always a show which has one of his advisors as a guest. Obama presents a united media front. He just gave one of his fake town hall meetings about health care, in which pre-selected voters are called upon to ask fake questions which forward his agenda. This is a follow-up to his ABC special on health care, and it occurs in the context of dozens of guests on dozens of cable news shows. Obama's flunkies and San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom were on MSNBC this morning, as a part of the media blitzkrieg. Listen to Mr. Newsom.
The public option draws costs down. We're providing comprehensive health care, regardless of your pre-existing conditions, for about $280. We're proving the paradigm. You can provide something at a less cost without rationing and without denying people treatment.
Gavin Newsom, part of Obama's health care blitzkrieg. You can almost hear the tank treads in the background. That's how it works. A media devoted to Obama's agenda takes every spare minute it hasn't already devoted to coverage of Michael Jackson and Billy Mays and Ed McMahon and Farrah Fawcett, and gives it straight to Chairman Obama so he can shove socialized medicine down the throats of America. And then as often as not, they'll cut to a drug commercial. That's right, Obama's health care plan brought to you by some drug peddler who will make billions off of it. And now that Obama's got 60 votes in the Senate, the Republicans aren't likely to do much more than haggle over how much money they can get for their districts. The blitzkrieg has succeeded, and the dark days are coming. We recently talked about Obama's plan to make our healthcare industry a socialized medicine plan. The promises made by our administration say that this bill will be debt neutral and that you can keep your own provider and insurance that you currently have. Well, joining us today to take a closer look at this massive bill is Robert Moffitt with the Heritage Institute, who has been studying the so-called healthcare reform.
The week before the July 4th recess, the House leadership unveiled a mammoth 852-page blueprint for overhauling Americans' health care system. It has been called the Tri-Committee Health Reform Bill. It's the product of three major House committees, the House Committee on Ways and Means, the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, chaired by Henry Waxman, and the House Committee on Education and Labor, chaired by Congressman George Miller of California. And while the committee chairmen have conducted the first round of hearings on the bill, the congressional leadership, at the urging of President Obama, would like to see the measure pass the House of Representatives by July 31st, 2009. So, we are faced here with, in effect, a health bill the size of a telephone book, and it's going to result in federal control over the healthcare sector of the economy with the implementation of far-reaching policies that will impact doctors and patients in both the public and the private sector.
What are the main points of the bill?
Michael, there are three big things in this bill which have a tremendous impact on the future of Americans' healthcare and how they get it. The bill would create a government-run healthcare plan that would compete against private health insurance plans. The sponsors of the bill say that they want a level playing field. However, the public plan or the government plan would be pay doctors and hospitals based on the rates of the Medicare program. And because the rates of the Medicare program usually run between 20% and 30% below what are private sector rates, depending on different parts of the country, the public plan would certainly enjoy an advantage in competition with the private plans. Of course, at the same time, the taxpayers would assume the risk for the public plan. So we can expect that with the taxpayers assuming the risk with the public plan and private health care plans having to assume risks on their own, there would really be no possibility of what we would call a level playing field. Basically, it's hard to imagine a level playing field where the Congress creates a government health plan to compete against private health plans while also creating the rules for its competitors. A second feature of this major bill is the creation of a national health insurance exchange.
Well, how does that work?
This will be, in effect, a national which will include private health plans as well as the public health plan, which is going to compete against them. In the House bill, the health insurance exchange is going to be governed by a commissioner. It will be a national institution, but it's not going to be simply a market creator. It's going to be a powerful regulatory agency. And combined with the right to set federal benefits for all private plans, as well as the public plan, it is likely that the national exchange is going to become an engine that is not going to expand choice, but rather limit choice and reduce competition. The federal government, after all, is going to be in the business of deciding what kind of health care plans are going to be able to compete in the national market, and the federal government is also going to set up what kind of benefits people will get, will establish the kind of benefits people will get in health insurance coverage. Which brings me to the third point. Congress would require every American to have health insurance that the Congress itself would define as acceptable coverage. So you may have health insurance today, but that doesn't necessarily mean that tomorrow that that coverage would be acceptable coverage. Under the terms of the House bill, if you have existing coverage, that coverage would be grandfathered. But the content of health insurance would change over time and would be legally required to conform to federal standards over time. In group insurance, there would be a 5-year grace period. At the end, in any event, the individual insurance market, or health care plans bought in the individual health insurance market, would, after a time, no longer be considered acceptable coverage. Finally, the bill contains both an individual mandate to buy health insurance and a mandate on employers to provide a level of insurance that is approved by the government. Under the bill, an individual would be required to enroll in an acceptable health plan or face a tax penalty. There would be an exception for hardship cases.
Mandated? Well, what would the penalty be if you choose not to participate?
If an individual did not have an acceptable health plan, the individual would be subjected to a tax penalty of some sort. For employers, employers would be required to offer, again, an acceptable health care plan, or they would be required to pay a tax. It is estimated the tax would be an 8% payroll tax. As economists note, the cost of an employer mandate is not normally borne by employers, but it is invariably passed on to employees in the form of a wage reduction or a reduction in other compensation or even job loss. Michael, there is no estimate of wage or employment reductions in the House bill right now. That's to come. In any event, the president has said repeatedly that if Americans like their private health insurance, they would be able to keep it. But in fact, the incentives that are built into the House bill, a combination of mandates and a provision for a public plan, would certainly guarantee that millions of Americans would lose their private health insurance coverage, regardless of their personal preferences. Indeed, the Lewin Group estimated that 113.5 million people would lose their coverage under the terms of the House bill if the enrollment were universal, open to every employee, and the plan, the government plan, used Medicare rates. But we don't know what the real cost yet of the House bill will be.
Well, thanks for analyzing this for us, Robert.
Savage.